There is a candle in your heart, ready to be kindled. There is a void in your soul, ready to be filled. You feel it, don't you? You feel the separation from the beloved. Invite the beloved to fill you up, embrace the fire. Remind those who tell you otherwise that love comes to you of its own accord, and the yearning for it cannot be learned in any school.
Morning.
I hate leaving, but I like traveling and I like getting somewhere. I particularly like to visit with different UU congregations. And as a pulpiteer, I'm an aficionado of the pulpit. And this just has to take the cake. I've been looking at it and looking at it, and I see so many things. You know, I see bones, and I see plows, and I see prairies, and it's just wonderful. So Pam and I are delighted to be here today. Right? That still holds? When I wrote this at 4 in the morning, when I got a call saying that my flight had been canceled, and because we have snow back where we are. But we're really delighted to be here, and we were delighted to be your facilitators for your social justice empowerment workshop. Very thankful for the warm reception that we received. We've been in communication with Rick Croft now for weeks, months, years, I don't know. Seems like I've known you forever. And I hope that you feel proud of the work that you've done, you and your associates, all the planning and arranging and fretting that it seems to take to run a successful workshop or a social justice program. And I want to say thanks to Nancy Rice, who I don't think is here today, but she was a great logistician. She chauffeured us around your lovely town. And yesterday, Gwen, I don't know where Gwen is, your sister, took us on a tour of the lovely grounds, and that was really wonderful, not only to be connected to here, but to Transylvania. And this sanctuary, Fellowship Hall, as welcoming as its people. Thanks to all of you who cooked and served. We want to thank the youth in particular and wish you well on your trip to Boston. And remember, Lawrence, where I live, is just 30 minutes north and has a rich history. And we would welcome you at the newly forming Community Church of Immigrant City, which is dedicated to the practice of social justice as a spiritual discipline. And I wonder if all of you who participated would just stand for a brief moment. There were a lot more of you, but the rest, I guess, are sleeping it off. And I just want to say you really, really worked hard, and I want to say thank you. Wait a second, why are you sitting down? Time's wasting. I wanted to ask you, please, would you please leave and start working on all the things that you said you'd do? That was a long list. Okay. Just kidding. Do you know when I'm kidding? Please be seated. Stay seated, and let's enjoy each other's company for a bit longer before Pam and I have to fly away. And we're really, really sorry that your minister, Elizabeth, is not here. But Elton read a wonderful missive from her that reinforced her hope in you and her trust that you would do good things. I want to say thank you to Cheryl Dowlin as well for your wonderful photos, and Roger, is Roger here, for summarizing scores of visions and your excellent reporting back. And I want to thank all the newcomers who jumped in. And thanks for all the oldcomers for practicing being new again and again, as Costin reminded us. So obviously 70 people can't speak for a community of 400 or so, but they can passionately represent the heart of a social justice vision for all. From a welter of options comes to you three action areas that can bring your congregation together in unifying effective action to accomplish your overall mission and vision. The next steps are crucial and exacting as the seedlings are transplanted into the fecund soil. You have plowed and fertilize the ground of your community well. now to gently and solidly nurture the growth. An individual joins a fellowship or church such as yours not because they are deficient in any way, but because they want to be part of something grander than their individual self. And likewise, I believe a church is a complete unit unto itself, but it hasn't fulfilled its purpose, its destiny, its climax growth, until it realizes that it's thoroughly embedded in the life and cares of the world. So what is it to be spiritual? That's in the title. Like love and family and all enterprises of grandeur, there are ultimately no words, but I try to describe it. I say it begins when we realize that the sum of our actions and interactions are greater than the sum of their parts. We speak of a team like my beloved Celtics, having a great spirit, Ubuntu. I don't know who you're rooting for, and Idaho doesn't have a team, but they're going to win again. United in a great resolve, kind of mysterious, capable of great and surprisingly great things. Also, a clue comes from the Zen master Yasutani Roshi, who said that the greatest delusion that human beings share is thinking that I am here and you are there, as if there is someone out there to be saved by us. Social justice is spiritual to me when I can no longer figure out who is being helped the more, the person I think I'm helping or me who thinks he's helping someone. But it is imperative that, as Herbie Hancock says, we must save ourselves so that we can save ourselves. Jump in. The water's fine. And this booth, did I pronounce that correctly? has been doing that since you began as a gleam in the eye in the late 40s, as I understand it, and you've been doing it right up until the present moment. Still, you have questions and a shared unease. How can you do all that you do and the more that's being increasingly asked of you without getting overwhelmed and all bollocksed up? How can we make our involvement with the welcoming congregation and the Whittier School and the Interfaith Sanctuary more vital? How can we keep from being burned out? How can we become re-enchanted? For obviously, we cannot keep from singing. Well, that's enough for the NFs, the intuitive feelers. Get that? Myers-Briggs? Now for the STs, the sensing thinkers. And we're all everything, but we have our preferences. What did we do together? Well, we began by affirming that whatever could happen from the workshop, you've already done incredibly, incredibly wonderful things. Each starfish beached and panting for breath that is returned to the sea makes a difference in the great web of all being. You created a timeline of your congregation going back to the 60s that is thick with accomplishments. When I said that word thick, I remembered the great late Bill Coffin, who went to our church, Arlington Street Church in Boston, in the heyday of the Vietnam War, to support the young men who were defying the draft. But so crowded was the sanctuary that he had to go around to the back door, where he was greeted by the minister of Arlington Street Church, the wonderful Jack Mendelson. And Coffin said, "Oh, you Unitarians, thin on theology, thick on ethics." And so you are. So when someone calls you thick, take it the right way. This is a congregation that could never sit idly by when there were injustices occurring nearby. You talked about how it felt to be involved personally in social justice. One person put it beautifully for me. It feels good to step out and do something brave, and it also feels slightly terrifying. That's when you know you're walking that narrow ridge between obedience to the call of one's conscience and disobedience to the ill-framed mandates of society. Good and slightly terrifying. And you visioned, thank you again, Roger, for encapsulating scores of statements of what you would look like in the year 2050. So over the next 41 years, you came yesterday, projected that you'll have a larger church, or you'll spawn newer churches, you'll run a homeless shelter, a food bank, a child care center, you'll have a UU retirement center, UU missionaries who knock on your door for no apparent reason. You'll be engaged in all the vital issues of the day: immigrants' rights, LGBTQ rights, ending poverty and hunger, Thanks also, Roger, for pointing out that there have been tremendous changes since the historic year, counting backwards 41 years, 1968. And we must be prepared to ride the whirlwind of change. What else did we learn? We learned from Richard Gilbert, he, the author of The Prophetic Imperative, that a congregation can be conceived of as a wheel, diagrammed as a circle, surrounded by a bigger circle with three sections, and the center is worship, the celebration of life, and there's a lifespan religious education program, a dimension of social action and moral discourse, and a caring community. For if we cannot take care of ourselves, what right do we have to care for others? And in that sense, justice begins at home, and also there's no way to justice. Justice is the way. But each section of that wheel is a place where social justice can take place. We saw that social justice has many faces as well as places. We do social justice by providing advocacy and service, by witnessing and educating, and by community organizing. It was pointed out that service is how we truly engage with those we'd like to help, and it is also the way we profoundly and directly understand what people's issues are. But if all we do is service, if all we do is feed the poor, house the homeless, empower the imprisoned, wonderful things, without dealing with the structures of evil that maintain these inequities, it is almost as if we're abetting the criminal actions of neglect and oppression that create those dangers in the first place. We familiarized ourselves with the social justice cycle, and in particular the teachings of liberation theology, which urge us to act and then reflect and study further in order to act subsequently with more power. Then we let you loose, and in that corner of the room, you brainstormed at your tables. It was amazing how well you followed instructions. It's just, we never know what to expect. You know, we always start, you know, there'll probably be a rebellion here, and nobody will follow the plan. That'll be fine, too. But you sat at your tables, and we said, brainstorm, and you brainstormed. You brainstormed scores and scores of possibilities. We said the largest universe of possibilities you can think of so that, you know, some time from now, you don't say, oh, I forgot. I really wanted to, you know, save baby seals. That's my burning issue. They were all out there, scores of them, and then they were dutifully inscribed on balloons. I was hoping there'd be some here. And then we clumped you all together, and we said each of these balloons is, you know, how you, what do they call it, juggling the ball, keeping the balls in the air. Well, we said for one minute, keep these balloons in the air. Could you do it, Elaine? No, you couldn't. And you couldn't clutch at them. You couldn't hold them. If they dropped, they dropped. And then at the end, we clutched them after 60 seconds, and we read what was on there, and we saw the things that were on the ground, and it was sad. It was sad, even frightening, to see what can be lost. And this won't be perfect, but this is generally how social justice works in a small, pastoral-sized congregation, which you last were, by the way, maybe 3 or 5 years ago, because we never act our size. But we respond to what comes up when we're acting as a pastoral congregation. We do the best we can according to chance and our passions. With a program-sized congregation pushing out from 400 members and contributing friends, it's just time to become more deliberate about what you do now. Or else you'll continue to be challenged in these ways that you ask for relief. Continue to be challenged. How are we going to share the load? Not enough people working. How are we going to have adequate focus? How are we going to not get overwhelmed and burn out? On top of everything else, there's already the challenge of living in a world that faces unprecedented, enormous social and economic deficits. So how can you capitalize on your efforts, empower yourselves? You return to the groups, and you chose each group 3 issues to unite the congregation in action. Grounding, fit, and opportunity were your guides. Do you have resources here already to begin to deal with it? Is your congregation simpatico with that issue? Is this the time? And then we combined all the choices, and we had a list. But from a plethora of choices, we just had a bunch, about a dozen. Remember that? Affordable housing, homelessness, refugees, addressing poverty, hunger, community hunger, human GLBTQQ rights, diversity, outreach, Native Americans, economic, environmental issues, interfaith issues, issues with the undocumented. And each person then came up and voted with 3 dots. Lo and behold, you came up with 4 issues. But then, this is amazing how these things happen. They don't, you know, the course of true love never ran smoothly. And then we came up with three areas that really spoke to us: economic justice, environmental justice, human rights. And you heard the results of that. So nothing need change. You can erase this weekend from your memory. Keep it as a time when people who cared about each other and knew how to play nicely with each other engaged in some animated thinking and discussion. And we didn't really come to change anything. We didn't come certainly to reject anything. But you can take that thought and feeling experiment, those of you who are here, and share it with others. And you could slightly change your structure. You can create a coordinating council. And each action group can reflect and study and create a consolidated approach to responding to your various mandates. And you can keep your dreams alive. And you can flesh out the promises that you have individually made to change your justice footprint. So I say, be bold, be daring, fear not. You will get nothing perfect. As one of my bosses said, we must be getting a lot done. We're sure making a lot of mistakes today. I hope you make a lot of mistakes and renew yourselves and re-enchant yourselves again and again.
I'm here to put a little P.S. on Reverend Galen's summary of our workshop yesterday. Here you are in Boise. You're in one of the most critical places in the country, in Idaho, in the state capital, in a position to be on the cutting edge of social justice in this state, the largest Unitarian Universalist congregation in the state. But being on the cutting edge of social justice work is inherently challenging. And so my thoughts for you are to, with one small story, on the power of building active listening into your congregational life. It's the practice of social justice as a spiritual practice. And so what is a spiritual practice? A practice repeated over and over again that we can return to regularly. We use spiritual practice to deepen the meaning that we make out of our lives and to build integrity into both our lives and our communities. It's the choices that we make that are coming, that are bringing into line our practice and our values. So I have one little story to tell you. As a young woman, I worked in one of the lowest income counties in the country, in the coal country mountains of eastern Kentucky. It was the era of the Vietnamese War, and in Kentucky, many young men joined the army, so public sentiment was very pro-war. The Quakers, which is a traditional peace church, sent material aid to all sides in the Vietnam War. One project they sponsored was the ship the Phoenix, which delivered medical aid to both North and South Vietnam. That was extremely unpopular in the mountains of eastern Kentucky. And the Quakers sent a speaker, Horace Champney, to travel around the country. And I was a young woman, and I went to hear what he had to say. He was a very elderly gentleman from Ohio. He looked just almost on the brink of senility. When I attended the meeting where he came, he entered a room full of people who were fiercely angry. And he began to speak, and he was shouted down. I'd never been in a room where people shouted down the speaker and expressed such anger that you could feel as if the man was going to be run out of town on the rail. So I was waiting for him to say something that was absolutely brilliant that would knock their socks off, and he didn't. He just, he listened. And then he said, well, now let's see if I can understand you. And he practiced the art of active listening by repeating what he had heard from the people in the room. And the people in the crowd yelled, no, no, that's not how it is at all. And they gave him more and more angry feedback. And Horace Champney tried again. He tried again and again to state what he'd heard them say. And after two or three times going back and forth, he said, "Well, I think I understand that, but I see it slightly differently." And he went on to describe why he had gone to North Vietnam with material aid and what he had experienced in North Vietnam. And this time, the temperature in the room had dropped, and he was able to get a very respectful hearing. The impact on me as a young woman watching this exchange was electric, because for me, it started what has really been a lifelong meditation on the power of listening. And I became a Quaker. And much later, a Quaker Unitarian Universalist. So here you are in Boise, Idaho, in one of the most critical places, possibly playing that cutting-edge role, being on the fine line between people with various opinions strongly felt. Can you bring the practice of active listening into your congregation in a way that you get an opportunity to practice? One of the congregations that I've visited has instituted a month-long listening circle. Those who attend sit in silence, listening carefully to anyone who feels moved to speak. And people come into the circle bringing their concerns, their disagreements. And it's a place that provides a space for cultivating the spiritual practice of active listening. And I encourage you to look for those opportunities to bring active listening, reflection, into your congregational life with testimonials in your Sunday service and ways of building the practice of not only active listening, but reflection into your life, because in that moment in time, you actually grow your own spiritual growth. It's actually an opportunity for spiritual growth for each of us. Those are the moments when we live and grow. Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to work with you and your congregation on building your social justice program in the congregation. It's been a great delight. We think that you're an exceptional church. We're glad to have been able to be with you. There is a candle in your heart, ready to be kindled. There is a void in your soul, ready to be filled. You feel it, don't you? You feel the separation for the beloved. Invite the beloved to fill you up. Embrace the fire. Remember those who tell you otherwise, that love comes to you of its own accord, and the yearning for it cannot be learned in any school.